Working Cows Podcast, Episode 120.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. This is Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. Happy New Year. Stick around after the show. Another announcement, a new way to listen to the show if you are interested in that. We are going to share that with you. But today we are talking to Dallas Mount. He is CEO of Ranch Management Consultants. First time I get to introduce him that way, but really excited to have him here to talk about running efficient meetings as well as what kind of time commitment we should be allowing for working on the business, not just in the business. So some good stuff here about practical ways we can run our ranch a little bit more efficiently. So Dallas, welcome back, and thanks for joining me on the Working Cows Podcast.
You bet, Clay. Glad to be with you.
So we're going to talk a little bit today about the difference between WITB, as you call it at Ranch Management Consultants, WITB and WATB. And I guess, first of all, let's define the difference between the two and talk about the necessity of the one and emphasize why we even want to be thinking about these kind of things.
Sure. I think it really goes back to what is the ranch, or really the agriculture operation. Is it a hobby? Or is it a business? And I think if you want it to be a business, which most people that we work with want it to be a business, right? They want it to support a portion of their life. They want it to be something that provides for them rather than just something they have to keep putting into. You know, for some people that own agricultural business, agricultural operations, they really aren't businesses, and they don't want them to be businesses. They want them to be a hobby. But if you want it to be a business, then so is it something that you just work in, or is it something that works for you? So that's, I think, really the core question. If it's going to be something that works for you, then you're going to need to work on it to make it that way. It's not just about feeding cows, fixing fence, putting up hay, irrigating, all those kind of things. It's about building a business that includes some or all of those things. So if that's what we want, at some point we have to work on it. And that's when we talk about working on it, we talk about having what be time, what be meetings, time that's focused on working on the business and not just allowing ourselves to fall into this seductive trap of continuing to work in it all the time.
Yep. And I think when I sat with you in the High Plains Ranch practicum, two, 3 years ago now, your discussion was about the fact that ranchers are good at the working in the business side of ranching, that they've gotten the production side of it down. We don't necessarily need to shoot for higher productive numbers. We need to start trying to figure out how to maximize the return on investment.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you look at statistics across ranches and our production numbers are outstanding. I mean, that the ranching as a whole, agriculture as a whole, we're great at raising crops, we're great at raising calves, doing all those things. We're really terrible at running a business that raises calves, raises crops, and all those things. Because, I mean, we're hitting the mark on our production numbers, but our profitability numbers stink as a whole. I think that to me, that's what drives that point home, is we need to figure out how to run this business, not just how to raise the calves.
And about how much time would you say is necessary to spend in the what be section of your day, your week to week, or your day to day? How much time do you see the most successful businesses from a profitability standpoint spending on what be work?
So let's take an average mom and pop size operation. Okay, so it's a business that's supporting one or two families. Have you ever heard of the 80-20 rule, Clay, the Pareto principle?
I've heard of a few different 80-20 rules. I'm not sure if I'm thinking of the same one.
So the one that I'm thinking of, it says that 80% of your results comes from 20% of your effort. And so if you flip that around, then only 20% of your results are coming from the remaining 80% of your efforts. And it's funny, as you start paying attention to that, watching for evidence of that in nature and in all sorts of things that happen, it holds up in a lot of cases. But, you know, we find that it holds up in business pretty well as well. So let's look at that 20% time as kind of that standard. So for a mom-and-pop operation, let's say somebody was actually working a 40-hour week. Now, I know most people in this business don't actually work a 40-hour week, but let's say they were. So how many hours would be 20% of a 40-hour week? Out of 5 days, how many days would it be?
One.
Be one. Yeah. So 1 day a week working on the business could make a huge difference for most people in their bottom line and the way that their life is running. Now, I don't think working 1 day a week is the right target. I think it's two mornings a week. Okay? Two mornings a week. And why would we say two mornings a week instead of one full day?
Productivity declines after lunch.
Yes, I know it does for me. I don't know if that's the case for you. You know, most people are better in the morning than they are in the afternoon. So if you could take, and we talk about jobs being $100 an hour jobs, jobs being $10 an hour jobs, that's probably an underestimate of what they're really worth. It's probably more like $500 an hour jobs and, you know, $15 an hour jobs. But the $110 makes a better illustration. So for me, I've got time of the day when I'm worth $100 an hour, and I've got time of the day when I'm worth probably less than $10 an hour. But for most people in agriculture, we tend to put off our high-value tasks until the end of the day when we come in, we're tired, we put in all day outside, and we come in and we, all right, now let's finally get down to looking at this, and our minds are shot, our bodies are tired, and we don't do a very good job of doing it. So, you know, it might be contrary to popular thinking in agriculture, but we think you should spend your best time doing your highest value work. So two mornings a week working on the business, and the rest of the time you can knock yourself out working in it. But for a lot of our alumni, they found that's the groundbreaking change in their business. If they can create the discipline of themselves and the culture in their organization to spend two mornings a week working on the business.
A little bit of behind the scenes podcast insight is that you don't keep everybody to 100% of your episode. So I want to front load this with as much enticement as possible to get them to stick around for the details at the end. And so what are some typical insights that you see people gaining from their WOTB meetings? What are some of the things that people are, how are they realizing these big benefits that you're talking about?
Yeah. So, I mean, I get the opportunity to sit in on WOTB meetings with some people. So I'm going to speak from my personal experience about the kind of things that we've been able to find during that time. Just thinking about a ranch family that I got the opportunity to do this with. And we essentially, you know, during that WOTB time, we pulled the business apart, and looked at it economically and said, what things are creating value, what things are not creating value. And then we start diving in, okay, these things that are working, how can we make them work better? And then how can we scale them? And, you know, for a reasonably sized family operation, you're almost always going to be able to find $50,000 in that with a few mornings a week put into it. For some operations, that number is going to be more like $100,000. For some places, I've $300,000 or even $500,000 of value has been found by making that time happen. Now, what could be more important than those dollars is probably the relationships and making some relationships that otherwise would have fallen apart. People have gone their separate ways to helping heal those relationships and families intact. That's probably worth a heck of a lot more than $500,000 in those kind of outcomes. So I guess priceless is really the response. You know, ignoring it and continuing to do, oh, we're too busy, right? We don't have time to do that. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. That's the easy thing to do. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, we just got to put our heads down and go to work, right? sure, shoot, anybody can do that. But having the discipline and the, creating the culture in your business to make this time to happen, that creates some, it really is the stronger person that can do that and the person that's got more self-discipline. So that's where it's at. That's where the rubber meets the road.
So does the content or I guess I'm imagining that the content of these meetings changes given, you know, the season. But is the meeting about reflecting on the result of our effort, or is the meeting about we're going to be proactive and plan what's coming up in the next season, whether it's our marketing decisions or our breeding decisions or our feeding decisions? What do you see the people who are getting the most benefit, how are they approaching these meetings?
Most of the time should be spent looking forward, and every now and then we should have one where we're checking back in with how things have gone. But the real value is the planning and the preparing and the looking forward and strategizing on that. It's fine to every now and then look back and say, okay, we just finished a really busy season. What went well? What could we have done different? Okay, great. Now we've got those lessons in mind. Let's put those to work looking forward. But you certainly don't want to spend the majority of your time looking backward, because there's nothing you can do about that stuff. Let's put our effort where we actually have some leverage, which is looking forward. One thing I want to drive home to, they don't always have to be meetings. It could be what be time scheduled for yourself, and time for you to be reflective about your business and for you to sit down and think through some strategies on, and it doesn't always have to be economic. I think oftentimes people think, well, my what-be time is when I'm sitting inside doing my numbers. And that can be a part of it, but it doesn't have to be all of it. You know, it could be you thinking about sitting out in a favorite spot in your pasture on a hill overlooking the place and thinking, you know what, in the next 3 years, what are my major goals for myself and my business? That's wealthy time. It doesn't have to be sitting inside across a spreadsheet with people.
Right. And we tune in here and we start out and we're both in the front of our mind have a concern about how exciting or compelling can an episode about meetings or about working on the business, how good can that be? But when I open it up to my private Facebook group, I get a lot of traction on stuff like this because I think people are interested and want to know, you know, how do I make myself a better manager of this business that I have been entrusted with? And so I've got some questions here from the private Facebook group and also the MeWe group we're going to jump into here. And first one is for a husband and wife operation or single person, what have you seen as an effective accountability process for sticking to what be?
A couple of pieces of that jump to mind are having a group that you're reporting back to. That's holding you accountable to the things that you say you need to get done on what be. It's not the what be that you hold yourself accountable to. It's the results that the what be produces. So if somebody puts on their board, I need to do more what be, okay? That's not a very effective motivating thing. But if you said, I need to develop my drought plan for 2020, I need to develop my economic plan for 2020, okay? And you know what the pieces of that look like. Now we've got something to what be on, okay? And that's what you're going to hold yourself accountable to. So if this is something you struggle with, get yourself an accountability partner, an accountability group, somebody that you share this with and say, hey, here's the things that I'm going to accomplish in the next 30 days, in the next 3 months, whatever the right time frame is. And then they're going to hold you accountable to those. They're going to call you and say, you know, hey, did you get this stuff done? If not, what the heck? What's keeping you from taking your business to the next level? So that's probably the most effective way. Another way that some people have reported some results is giving yourself rewards. Whatever it is that you like to do, setting that up as a, when I get this done, then I get to go do that.
When I was at the Ranching for Generations conference, I thank you for the invite to be a part of that. And I sat down at a table and just happened to sit down at a table full of Texans and was talking to them. And, you know, I said, you know, most of my downloads come from Texas. And I'm like, really? I don't know anybody who thinks like this where I'm from, you know, and it just, they're all disconnected. Texas is a big state and they're all separated, and so they feel isolated. But I think that there's an opportunity through the internet to maybe facilitate some of these kind of relationships. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a neighbor that you're going to and saying, hey, can you hold me accountable to finishing my drought plan or whatever that might be. I guess, have you seen?
Absolutely. There's other ways to make these connections too. It doesn't have to be face to face. It probably would be better if it's not neighbors, you know, but there needs to be a pretty high level of mutual respect. And, you know, I see some of these things that are attempted and I don't see very many of them be successful. I think it's because we often don't want to have the hard conversations with each other. Right. So Clay, if you and I were a part of this and you know, we've made deals with each other that, hey, in the next 3 months, I'm going to get these things done, and I don't get them done, and you don't harp on me, and you don't say, Dallas, you know, what the heck, man, I'm giving up my time to look this over for you, and you're dropping the ball, then you're letting me down, okay? So it needs to be the kind of relationship that we can be hard on each other and walk away with mutual respect.
What are some of the, or I guess, do you recommend having a set of standard operating protocols or procedures that in place, and is the WHATB meeting a place to formulate those?
Yeah, I do. I are you talking about like a standard operating, like these are the times we'll have our WHATB time? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I think also having a guideline for the business, you know, or a plan in place. But I think I like the where you're going with that answer too. I want to hear that. So.
Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking back to time I saw James Sewell talk about what they do on the TA ranch, and I thought it was extremely effective. He talks about the Monday morning planning sessions that they have on that ranch, and everybody's expected to be there. I mean, it's an expectation that you will be there, but that time is used very efficiently, especially in the summer. In the wintertime, sometimes those meetings can drag on a little bit, you know, because nobody's really anxious to go outside. But, you know, when there is an expectation that people will be present, and then when the meeting is run efficiently and people are getting value out of it, when there's decisions being made that people want to be a part of, they will make themselves available to be there. If people are, like, let's say you've got a family ranch and you guys say, oh, hey, we're going to meet on Monday at 1 o'clock and make some decisions related to this item, okay, whatever it is. And time goes on and people are like, oh, well, now I've got to do this on Monday or now I've got to do that on Monday. Okay? Then the response is, well, I thought this was a time that we agreed that we could all make work. Now, we've got some important decisions to make and we'd love to have your input on this. We need to make these decisions whether you're here or not. So, you know, if you're here, we'd love to have you be a part of it. But we're going to have to make these decisions without your input if you're not going to make it. And then, you know, they've moved on. The times I've seen when these things start, the balls start getting dropped, are when the meetings don't start on time and they go way too long. You know, it becomes a sit around and kick the ball around session rather than an actual let's discuss it and make some decisions. So if meetings are dragging on far too long, the same issues are coming up and being discussed over and over and over again. People, there's not a clear result of the meeting. We don't have an action plan as a result of the meeting, you know, and then people are not being held accountable to that action plan. These are all things that make it fall apart. So if those are things that make it fall apart, then I guess back to the question, what could be some standard operating procedures for how to run effective meetings? Okay, we're going to have an agenda that goes out ahead of time, and maybe there's only one or two things on the agenda. Okay, we're going to make a decision about the breeding program on the cows, and we're going to make the grazing plan for the coming year. Okay, those are the two things on this agenda. And then when we have the meeting, we stay focused, and that time is used effectively. If we said we're going to start at 8, we start at 8, and if we said we're going to be done at 10, we're done at 10. And then at the end of the meeting, there's a action plan that goes on, that's written up. And I put, don't write it down on your notes in front of you. Get a flip chart, get a whiteboard, and on that whiteboard write, what's the action that's going to take, who's going to be responsible for having done it, and when's the date that it's going to be done by. And if you leave the meeting with an action plan, people will feel like, hey, something was accomplished at this meeting, and we know what's going to happen. And the next time you have a meeting, the first thing you do is you come back to the action plan. All right, Clay, you said you were going to have the drought plan draft done by January 5th. Hey, our meeting here, it's January 7th. What do you have to show? Okay. And then if it's, well, nothing, well, but hey, I thought that was agreed to last time. What's getting in the way of getting this done? You know, do we need a new deadline? And by when will it happen? And so that's the way that I think that those meetings are effective, that's the way they're held.
It seems like one of the benefits of the WOTB meeting is that it helps to make sure that you're not in a rut of this is when we turn the bulls out, this is when we market the steers, this is how we treat our replacement heifers. Is that accurate to you, that it helps you to just not be, this is the calendar and I'm a slave to the calendar? Is that something that people are using this tool for?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. So, like right now, you and I are talking in mid-December. So what kind of things might go on the WOTB plan? Well, we were just talking about the grazing plan. Okay, this is a great time of year to be talking about, okay, hey, guys, let's have 2 hours here. We're going to talk about this next Monday morning, and we're going to review the grazing plan for 2020. Okay, now, somebody's going to come with 2019's grazing about what pastures we were in, what times of the year, and then, you know, we're going to take 2020 and put it on the calendar and say, all right, what are we going to do now? So let's write up there the constraints, you know, when do pastures not have water, when are poisonous plants an issue, and then let's start as a group coming up with that 2020 grazing plan. Okay? So that's quite a bit different way of running a business from, oh, we're just going to do what we did last year. Okay? Maybe what we did last year worked last year, but it's not going to work this year. You could do the same thing with what bulls we're going to buy and what, you know, fill in the blank, what protein supplement we're going to be feeding this winter, what our hay feeding program is going to do, you know, what's the vacation policy, and what are people's plans for the coming months. You know, make it important that, hey, the expectation is everybody gets off the ranch for at least a week a year. You know, that's the expectation. So when are people going? You know, let's create some mental health around this thing. I think those are all things to put on the docket just in the next coming months.
Dealing with, you know, all the four pillars, as we talked about so long ago, of an effective ranching operation, you know, and making sure that you're paying attention to those and not letting anything get neglected, so that you're able to run an effective business. So aside from an agenda and coming away with an action plan, are there any other things that you recommend for an effective and efficient meeting? Sage Askin wonders if there's a best snacks for the workplace and if that plays a part in it.
Sage better get beyond meat sticks for their meeting. I think that would be appropriate. I don't even know if they make those. Hummus and Beyond Meat. There we go. That's the Askin Land and Livestock WOTB snacks. Perfect. hey, one thing that's come to mind is seasonality of these things. I think people often think I need to be having WOTB meetings twice a month or you know whatever those are. I need to stick that rigid schedule and do it all year long. And you know, I think that's an unreasonable expectation. There's times of the year when it's time to put your head down and get it done. And you know, if you're in a time of year where you guys are running 14, 16 hour days to make things happen, people are not going to be in the right frame of mind to say, okay, let's come together and talk about our vision for the future, right? So there might be stints of the year, and hopefully they're not longer than 2 or 3 months, where you know people are just having to go flat out just to keep the wheels moving on the business. But then there's times of the year when you need to have that opportunity to pull up, to maybe get more serious about your WOTB, to maybe you even need to be doing them weekly for you know a month or two out of the year to get caught up with what was dropped before. And this is really hitting home for me right now. I mean, we had a staff meeting here yesterday at RMC, and this is our go time. I mean, we are flat out, you know, delivering programs and doing those things. And I said to the staff, I said, I really feel like I'm dropping the ball here on the CEO role and the leadership role of the business. But I want you guys to know that come the end of March, we're really going to pull up and we're going to look at this thing holistically. And we've got a chart going in our main meeting room area of, you know, kind of a parking lot, if you've heard of that before, of just ideas and things that when time allows that we're going to come back and visit it. You know, almost on a daily basis, some one member of the team is going up there and writing something down and saying, hey, when things slow down, we need to come back and look at some way to fix them for doing things. So, you know, there's times a year when you just need to get the work done, and then there's times a year when you need to pull up and take a hold of it. So, and if you look at your business and you're not finding that you have that time when you can pull up and take a holistic approach at things, that's a big problem.
I guess I got one question that I don't think is necessarily related to this precisely, but I do want to give it some thought. When you consider bringing on some help, is it best to start with as needed or a more regular schedule so the person can learn your way of handling, he says stock, but I would say the business as well, knowing the individual asking the question. So that is a working on the business question, but it would probably be a question answered in a working on the business type setting. But I guess, what are your thoughts on that just from a consulting perspective?
The way I'm hearing the question is should I hire a full-time person or should I bring in a contract help to get the job done?
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay, yeah. Boy, I don't think there's a right side is cookie cutter answer to that. To me, that's going to be a very situational type of case. You know, from a overhead perspective, we almost always contract help beats full time help. You know, when you look at the overheads of your business and helping them manage, but there's times when you need a full time help, a person that's on staff and part of the team. So I guess I have a hard time answering that. If just here's a one size fits all.
Here's a thought that I had is if you can't afford to pay a full time person a full time wage, then maybe use a contract person and learn to figure out how to get the thing done by yourself when you don't need that contract person, I guess.
You know, and maybe I'm going to take a counter approach to that. What do you want the business to be? If we want the business to be something that's upsized, that we have help available, that, you know, that we're not tied to the business, I think go ahead and put money on before you can afford them. And then use that person to help you grow the business before you can afford them. That makes sense. I think
sure.
Sometimes we wait too long to say, well, we're going to bring somebody on when we can't afford them, but then that's going to cripple the business to actually be able to grow to where that'll happen.
Yep, I understand. Yeah, I've heard it said, and I know you have too. You can't run a sustainable business on unsustainable efforts. So
that's right. You got it. It's a good Dave Pratt quote. He nailed it on that one.
and I think I'm not sure he's been on without saying that. Maybe once or twice, but anyways, you know, I really appreciate it. So it's a helpful thing to keep at the front of your mind. So I saw I think on Facebook a post about you completing your first Ranching for Profit school as the CEO of RMC. So congratulations on that, and officially here live, happy birthday. So any thoughts on this, first couple of months as the head of RMC?
Oh man. I got a lot of thoughts on it. It's been really a joyful thing to be a part of and running it. And my heart is full. You know, after having completed that first Abilene school, I'm deeply grateful to what's come before me that's allowed me to do this, from the Stan Parsons, the foundation he laid, to the work Dave and Kathy Pratt have done to build this business into what it is, and create myself, my family, my team here, the opportunity to step into that and to continue it on into the next generation. My heart is full in that way, and my heart is also full with the people, our alumni, and all the folks that continue to support us, come to the schools, maybe a member of the VL, by just sending us notes and saying keep it up. It's extremely rewarding to be a part of it. It's also been a big transition, of course, for me, you know, moving from being an employee role at the University of Wyoming for the last almost 20 years to now running a business and being the guy, you know, and having a team here and making payroll and feeling the pressures of that and you know, having overheads to support and all that. I've always felt like a bit of a hypocrite teaching the school and teaching about business management and also, you know, being an employee and taking that wage. So, you know, I'm not anymore. Here we go. So, things are really going well. You know, a lot of credit to the people around me for making that happen. We've got an amazing staff here that's really making sure a lot of the eyes are dotted and teeth are crossed here at the home. So I can be running around doing a lot of the program delivery, you know, and having full schools this first year is an incredible place to be. So right now we're full all the way until the Albany school. So there's opportunities in Albany, New York. And we've got schools scheduled in Oklahoma City, Columbus, Georgia. And we're just getting ready to announce a school in Boise, Idaho in September. And we'll be starting our rounds, our same rounds for the winter that we've become accustomed to. So yeah, it's been an amazing change and a great transition. And we're in that time of year where we're just, you know, running like, you know, crazy and trying to meet our obligations for delivering the programs that we've committed to. So I'm looking forward to getting through this season and having the opportunity to pull up a little bit and be reflective. Just right along the lines of the conversation.
Well, I thank you for your time today, and I don't want to keep you any longer. I thank you for making some time during this busy season. If you feel like there's anything else that we left on the table regarding working on the business that just can't be left there, I give you freedom to share that at this point.
Yeah, I think we've hit the high points anyway. I guess I'd just like to end the day again with thanks to you, Clay. Every time I go anywhere now, to any kind of national meetings, to any kind of groups, Working Cows comes up and people say, you know, Working Cows has a big impact on their life. It's an amazing the community that you're creating with this and the impact you're having on people's lives. So thanks to you for the effort you're doing. You continue to amaze me. I too am a Working Cows groupie. So it's on my podcast right on the top of the list. So.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. And thank you for the challenge to get started. It's been a huge blessing, not just to me. At this point, it's starting to be a blessing to my family. So really, really been good and excited about the opportunities that it's presenting in the near future. So one other thing, of course, anything that you want to promote for RMC, you mentioned the Albany School still has some room. I think I saw that there for alumni there is an economics and finance deal coming up in Tucson. Any other things like that?
Yeah, I guess I'd just like to encourage folks to look at that Albany, New York school. I had the opportunity to go to New England this year and be a part of that group that started over there last year. There's an executive link chapter that meets in New England. Incredible people that are part of that. You know, to be honest, I was a bit skeptical. Is this the right area that RMC needs to be focusing on? I was completely blown away with the quality of folks in that group. The issues that they're facing are the same issues we're facing here. You know, the enterprises look a bit different. The scale looks a bit different, but the key problems are the same. I'm a bit jealous. Dave Pratt's going to be the instructor for the Albany School, and I'm a bit jealous of the way it's shaping up. There's folks registered from Australia, from Canada, from New England, from Wyoming, Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota. I think I saw some Southwest were coming in there. diversity makes a school awesome.
Right.
And that's looking like it's going to be one of the most diverse schools that we run this year. So it's going to be an outstanding school. And I'm always blown away with people that call in, and, you know, with our full schools in Montana, Colorado, South Dakota this year, we get a lot of calls from people that say, well, when are you going to do a school in my area? And, you know, I understand the desire to have that, but it's really asking the wrong question. You know, the question really should be, when is there going to be a school that I can make? It doesn't matter if the school's taught in Rapid City or Billings, Montana, or Albany, New York. The content is the same. It's the people that attend and make the school, and that Albany school is going to be one for the record book. So looking forward to seeing it. We've got the ones coming up in Georgia, too, so those work better for you.
Yeah, and that, you know, you sent me an email when we lined this up and said, what are we going to talk about? I'm like, oh, that's a novel question. So I started to dig around on RMC's website and read some Profit Tips articles, and I'm like, well, let's talk about this. But the one of the Profit Tips articles I came across, which will be linked at the show notes page, workingcows.net/120, was get out of your area, go somewhere outside of your area to an RMC or to an RFP school to really get the benefit of seeing how it's done somewhere else. And you don't know how your neighbor manages his ranch necessarily, and you really don't know how a guy in Georgia or Albany manages their ranch, so it could be a really good challenge to your paradigms.
Yeah, and even if it's not RMC, if it's something else, if it's, you know, a stockmanship school, if it's a grass management school, if it's a business management course, whatever it is, make sure there's one or two continuing ed programs on your docket every year that you're getting out of your area to go experience, and a well-rounded person, and get you thinking bigger.
Sounds good. Good place to end it. Thanks,
all
Dallas.
Right. Thank you, Clay. You have a great Christmas, you and your family.
You as well. As I said, I have a new way to listen to the podcast. If you have an Amazon device, I'll say that without setting her off, in your kitchen or somewhere where you would like to be able to listen to the podcast, you can just simply say, and I'm about to set her off, if you're wanting to mute her before I talk, Alexa, play Working Cows Podcast on Apple Podcasts, and it will play the latest episode. And I've found that you can even skip back into the history of the episodes and play different episodes that were recently released. I haven't found a lot of good functionality for saying play episode number yet, but you can simply say, Alexa, play episode, or you can simply say, Alexa, play the Working Cows Podcast on Apple Podcasts, and it'll do it for you. So kind of cool way to listen. I've got a couple of different recordings in the works for next week. A couple of them I'm pretty excited about, and I'm not sure which one's going to get recorded first and when and all those different things. But you can be assured there will be another episode of the Working Cows Podcast real soon coming your way. We'll see you then.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.
Working Cows Podcast. Episode.
Say it loud again.
Episode 219.
Say episode one more time, nice and loud.
Episode.
Oh, not so loud. Say it again.
Episode.
120. 120.
120.
Without giggling.
120.